Thank you, DC, for taking the time and joining me on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. We met on Farcaster. We were talking about the Apple Vision Pro and the Vision Channel, which is sort of designated for that type of discussion. And for those who don't know or aren't familiar with Farcaster, it's this sort of decentralized social network. Or for now, it kind of looks like a crypto version of Twitter or something like that, but the long run ambition is a lot greater. So anyway, met on there, realized we had this common interest in experimenting early with the Apple Vision Pro, obviously the new VR AR headset. And I reached out and wanted to see if you wanted to do a podcast conversation about it, and you're fortunate enough to oblige. So great to be on with you today. I think before we dive too deep into things, would love to kind of start with your story and some of the decisions you made along the way to get to where you are today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jake. I'm excited to chat with you on this topic. And I think most people know me from my presence and kind of the crypto community where I've been pretty involved. I first got into crypto in 2013, bought the Bitcoin top, sold the bottom during the bear. I feel like a lot of people from that time frame might have similar stories, but I was smart enough to come back in around 2016, 2017, and found out about this cool thing called Ethereum. And ever since then, I've just kind of fallen down the rabbit hole, just fascinated by how all of these new functionalities that Ethereum brings to crypto, and kind of this idea of a global app and trust layer, and that is decentralized, censorship resistant, permissionless. And so that's kind of been my focus. And over the past few years, that's been my sole focus, more or less. And prior to that, I worked as a management consultant for many years. Decided to leave that to focus on crypto full time in around January of 2021. And moreover, just an overall technology enthusiast. I grew up with a lot of, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, which was, I think, more of a, there were, it was an interesting time for us. Someone sent me a link that says we're the Star Wars generation because we're not quite Generation X, we're not quite millennial. And what that means is we grew up with a world that was analog, right? We saw the world as this non-digital thing. We grew up with records, with and then cassette tapes, and then we saw this explosion of this digital world. We were some of the first people who were online as teenagers, and I feel like that kind of shapes my view of a lot of these technologies. And that goes through to crypto, to AR, VR, and everything else that's to come.
Yeah, so I guess pressing into that a little further, like I think a lot of people I've had on the podcast, to your point, it's kind of like you're kind of from this in-between generation where a lot of the guys I've had on are maybe a bit older, or in their 20s or early 30s or something like that. So you kind of grew up where, like, you were, like you said, in high school or whatever, one of the first generations to kind of like come online. How do you think that maybe like seeing the emergence of the internet and just the digital world more broadly, kind of positioned you to be able to see, like, okay, here's Bitcoin. This is kind of interesting. Let me buy some. Oh, okay, that kind of went to zero, or went down a lot. Let me sell that. And then, oh, here's Ethereum. Actually, this is really interesting. Like, what made you kind of like even aware of these things and being able to kind of appreciate them as you discovered them?
Well, I think the main lesson that I draw from all of that is how skeptical most people are about technologies that end up becoming world-changing. And I think that skepticism is natural, and I share it too. When I see my first exposure to a lot of this stuff is to be skeptical. I had heard about Bitcoin years before I actually bought any. And at the time, I was like, well, this doesn't even make sense to me, right? Because I grew, actually, for people like me who grew up during that period, we were all copying software, copying all kinds of content. And it was just like, it was the idea of digital scarcity almost didn't make sense to me, right? And it took me really diving into things and understanding, oh, this is something that's totally different from that. And it's almost ironic that it uses similar technology to like peer-to-peer file sharing, like which Napster pioneered. And Bitcoin is basically just almost like Napster running a money network, which is almost like, so it's almost ironic in some respect. But I think going back to that skepticism, I remember growing up in the 90s being a teenager and getting on this internet thing, you know, and I was probably one of the first, like, I looked up the number back then, but I want to say it was like less than 10 million people were online at that point. It's not a lot of people. And my parents are like, what are you doing wasting your time on this thing? Like, why? I'm like, you don't understand. There's all this like information out there. I'm chatting with people all around the world on various topics. You know, I was into playing games like Quake and Warcraft 2, and you could find people to play with online, and all of that stuff was just so fascinating to me. And I was like, wow, there's no way that in the future we're not going to all be spending a lot more time online. Fast forward 20 years later, and here we are spending a lot more time online, doing meetings online, doing interviews online. All of this stuff was totally inconceivable back in like 1992. People just didn't even consider that that was possible. And so for me, when I came across a technology like crypto, my first feeling was to be skeptical, but my next feeling was like, well, I need to like ask some more questions, because I don't want to be like the person who faded the internet in 1992. And there were a lot of people who were fading the internet back then. I mean, everyone thought it was like, I mean, oh, the very common perception, even for those who knew about it, was this is pointless. There's no way any corporation's ever going to use this, right? And then all of a sudden companies started launching websites in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And all of a sudden that's when the internet became something that was like, oh, here's something that's relevant to my life. I better learn about it. So I got into Bitcoin kind of with that mindset as I started to learn about it. And of course it's a hyper speculative asset. And back then it was even more speculative and the flows were a lot more dramatic. And I saw it quickly run up to 1000 and then I saw it crash. And I didn't really understand the Mt. Gox situation that well. It was kind of presented as Bitcoin was hacked. And rather than doing my due diligence at that time, I was like, you know what? I don't feel like dealing with this anymore. We'll see if it ever comes back. Fast forward to 2016, 2017, when it recovers at the all-time high. And that's when I was like, oh, maybe it wasn't a scam. And I feel like that arc that I just described is pretty common for people in crypto, no matter where they start. So even people from last cycle who may have gotten burned by buying the top and selling the bottom, they're going to be, at least some percentage of them will be back in a year when hopefully we're back at new all-time highs. And so I feel like that's the boom and bust of any emerging technology, especially one that is like network-based like cryptocurrency is. And we've definitely seen the same thing for like video games. We'll probably see it with AR, VR to some extent and so on.
Yeah, I think that cycle definitely repeats among all different types of people across all different, you know, aspects of the timeline, like you said. And a lot of people who sort of thought it died, you know, last cycle are going to be back this cycle with the same mindset that you had. It's like, it's easy to appreciate when you see something that you think is dead and then 3 years fast forward and it sort of like comes back to life. It's pretty interesting, like fundamentally. And if whatever got you to play with it the first time around, probably going to get you to go back and continue playing with it in the future. And then you sort of understand that this thing dies and comes back and you get on board maybe for the long haul. And you know, some of us were, you know, maybe able to participate in earlier cycles to sort of get over that hump, and other people are coming online now. But you mentioned this is not just for, you know, crypto, but also potentially for like VR, AR, which has had kind of like an interesting history to date, where it's been like super, you know, very, very much like hyped, and everyone talks about like the metaverse and all of this. And it's always like, oh, you know, this is coming, VR is right around the corner, et cetera, et cetera. But then like, you know, the Oculus comes out and it's like very cool. You put it on. For me personally, I think I might've tried the original Oculus, but then I tried like the Quest 2. I think that was the first one that I owned, and I put it on and I'm like, wow, like this is literally awesome. Like I'm like, you know, jaw dropped. But then like, you know, I use it a little bit more and like, I just basically don't end up using it. It just gets like collecting dust in the drawer. And it's weird to reconcile that, because it's like, here's this thing that's like mind blowing and like awesome, but I just don't use it. And I was very curious with, you know, Apple's release to see, is this going to be a similar type of situation, or is this going to be like a genuinely new computing paradigm? And something that I, you know, expect to use for hours a day every day or something like that. So I guess, what were your initial sort of, you know, steps into the water on VR and AR overall, and then initial sort of impressions before you even got the Apple headset? Like, what were you thinking and anticipating for it?
Sure. And you know, I got into VR as being like an early adopter type, right? I already had like a gaming PC that was relatively powerful back in like 2016, 2017. I had like a 1080 Ti card, which was relatively powerful at the time and was sufficient to run VR. So I had that as table stakes. And then I saw the Rift come out and I thought it was like an interesting concept, but it seemed really targeted, especially with the developer kits and so on. It seemed more targeted to developers. So I was like, oh, I'm going to wait a little bit on this. It didn't seem like it was that easy to use. There weren't that many compelling experiences. And then when HTC released the Vive, that was the first headset that I bought. And that was one of the ones where you have to like set up the base stations around your room. It has to be tethered to your PC. And when I first got in there, I kind of had a similar experience where my jaw dropped. And honestly, what's interesting is the quality of the PC VR experience actually exceeds the quality of some of the mobile VR experiences, which I'll talk about in a second. But back then it was extraordinary. And I was demoing, I invited all my friends over. I was like, you guys got to try it. And my favorite use case ended up being like inviting people over to like try it out and just watching their reactions. Cause everybody has like this joyous feeling of excitement. Like, wow, you use it and you're like, this is definitely the future. You can see this world where you're using this technology for a variety of different things moving forward, but certainly for gaming, it was exciting. And from there, I've owned a variety of different headsets like the Oculus Go. I got a Rift S. I had the Quest 1, 2, and 3. I have a PSVR 2. And I, you know, in using all of those, I wouldn't say any of them ever got back at that magic as that first moment. In a really palpable way. I mean, especially when I got to the Quest line, which, and I want to give the Quest some credit. It's definitely a very impressive piece of engineering. All three of them have been, and they're delivered at fairly compelling price points that are accessible. And that has been the first exposure for, I think, most VR participants at that point. So I really have to give Oculus and then Meta some credit for being able to produce products which got at that, because not everybody has that 1080 Ti, and these days we're really talking closer to like 3080 or 4080 card gaming PC. And so the ability to break out of that, at first I was kind of skeptical, but then when you do the wireless experience, you kind of walk away with, okay, this is actually a big deal, because being tethered to your computer just felt like such a step back. Like, I'm playing these games where I'm like turning around a lot, cables getting all tangled up. People did all kinds of crazy solutions, like have suspension systems running in their ceiling so the wire didn't get tangled. I didn't do all of that. But when I used the Quest for the first time, just being able to turn around 360 was huge. And I think that the subsequent iterations of the Quest have improved the graphics and so on. But fundamentally, those devices have been really focused on gaming. And the way that works is you put it on, you play a game, and then you take it off. And the Quests are fairly well designed to be able to move around in fairly flexibly. But you're not, most people are not in there doing computing tasks wearing the Quest headsets, even the Quest 3. I think this newest generation of Quest had some innovations as it relates to the pass-through cameras are much better, and they are color. It also had some innovations as it relates to hand tracking. That's kind of cool. I wouldn't say either of those is very good. It's just like kind of there, and it gives you a glimpse into what that future is. But I didn't find myself using those headsets a lot. And I think that changed for me when I got the Vision Pro, you know, 2 weeks ago. Because at first I was like, well, I'm going to try this thing out. I want to see how it works. I was just curious because Apple, typically when they get into a market, right, they don't half-ass it. They're normally going to come to the market with something that's good. Normally it's expensive, which this is. It's not going to be perfect. It's going to be clunky, but it's going to give you a full-featured experience of what is possible. And this has been true in basically every major product that Apple has released for the past like 30 years. They do try to do this, and it always starts off as this super expensive thing that very few people can afford or need. And then within 3 to 5 years, it becomes something that a lot of people want and then later need.
Yeah, no, that's a great background on sort of your experience. And obviously I think it's safe to say you're like 99.9 percentile of like, you know, dabbling with all of these early headsets and experiences. And certainly, like, I think I am probably 99 point something. And just in terms of at least globally, maybe in the US, just like 99 or 98 or whatever. But you're like at the cutting edge of like having experienced all of these things as they've come out and having been done it for a long time. And also being someone who can probably appreciate some of the earlier use cases around gaming and things like this. So now we sort of have your impression going into the Apple headset where you're like, okay, I'm going to try this out. I'm pretty optimistic here that this is going to be like fully featured and at least give glimpses as to what's, you know, coming in the future. And it's going to be too expensive and it's not going to be quite right. And it's going to be clunky, but there's going to be a lot there. When you actually got your hands on it and you tried it out, maybe not a jaw-dropping experience like your first experience, because it's just hard to replicate that. But right. What were your initial impressions?
Well, my first exposure to it was watching the video that was released, I think like 7 months ago, where Apple put out that promotional video. Yep. And at the time, I didn't find it that compelling. I was like, okay, am I really going to want to do work in this headset? And I felt like it was the promotional video, like made it feel like everything was like on rails, which was kind of an experience that I was used to actually in the Quest, where everything feels like it's on rails. And I was like, that didn't sound like it was it for me. And I had posted on my Twitter at that time. I was like, this looks interesting, but the idea of having like 3 iPad windows in front of me doesn't seem that compelling. That was my thought. That was my takeaway. And then as we got closer to the launch date, they started to reveal a little bit more. And at first I was like, it's too expensive. I don't know if I really want this. And then I finally gave in. I was like, you know what? If Apple's coming to the market with this, it's got to have something that's pretty interesting. And it's kind of, for me, you know, being fortunate to be in a position where I can afford it, I was like, I think it's worth the price of admission to see what they come up with. And if I really hate it, I'll return it. And, you know, that was kind of my rationale. So I went and I picked it up in the store on launch day. And they actually had me do the demo, which I don't know if you did the demo. Did you do the demo when you got yours?
The demo, like something you have to do in store, or just when you first boot it up, it has like you click on the different buttons and things like that.
Yeah. So if you buy it in the store, or if you pick it up in the store, they actually walk you through a demo and they make sure the light seal fits and all that stuff. So the demo was really interesting because I had done VR a fair amount, as you mentioned. And when I got into it, I didn't know exactly what to expect. But the first thing I noticed was, wow, this is way higher resolution than anything I've ever used. And it was noticeable. It's to the point where, you know, in almost every headset that I've used, some level of screen door effect is perceptible. And that's where, for people who use VR, when you're in it, you can almost see something that looks like a screen on a screen door or a screen window, which is overlaid across your view. I think the Quest 3 did a great job at minimizing that more. And the Quest uses, I think, LCD panels, but this is using an OLED panel. It's the first time this kind of panel has been used in this kind of headset with with this kind of pixel arrangement. For example, the PSVR 2, which I've got one behind me here in my racing rig, hooked up to my PS5 in the other room, that has like I think it's the Pentile arrangement, so you can see the pixels really notably. But in the Vision Pro, you really can't see them. It's almost like, wow, this is like super sharp. And the pass-through, I think the one area where I felt like I was oversold a little bit by the early reviewers was the pass-through, because they're acting like, oh, you can put this on and you can see really clearly. And you know what? It's not bad. It's definitely better than the Quest for me. The Quest is really warpy, especially around where your hands are. Right. But so that was one thing. The other thing was the hand tracking on the Vision Pro was incredible. Just the way that it could like replicate your hand and it could occlude apps in front of you. Like if you put your hand in front of an app window, it shows your hand. And that is so important, like for capturing your presence in this virtual world, right? And Apple had presented this as an AR headset. I think the reality is it's a VR headset with like an AR pass-through mode on it, but it's actually like pretty good. So there's a lot of these little things that I started to notice with the Vision Pro, specifically that resolution, the hand occlusion, the hand tracking, the eye tracking. So in the Vision Pro, when you put it on, the way that you interact with apps in there, as you know, is you use your eyes. So you look at something, you look at a window, and then you tap with your fingers. And that is your interaction. So that's the equivalent of moving your mouse cursor or your Oculus laser pointer the Meta Quest laser pointer inside your headset, pointing at something and clicking. Right. So that's all replaced by an eye track look and a tap. And then the sound was also super, super impressive. I mean, it's almost like you've got speakers all around you. And the Quest had pioneered some of that in headband speaker technology, but I feel like Apple kind of nailed it. And so the thing is, like, if you look at all these things individually, you're like, oh, it's just like an iteration. But when you bring all of those types of factors together, it feels pretty revolutionary. It felt revolutionary to me as someone who's tried a lot of VR products. I was like, wow, this all just like fits together. Now, that doesn't mean it's a perfect product, but I think it delivers this experience, this integrated, coherent experience, which maybe it takes someone like Apple to come to the table to really prioritize and deliver for the user. And we all know that they do that really well. You can say a lot of things about Apple, but they're good at that.
Yeah, there's a few things from what you just said that jump out at me. So maybe I'll just like sort of comment on a few of them and keep the ball rolling a little bit. But when I didn't have the demo, I had it shipped. So I didn't have any in-store things. So it was all my own experience. And first of all, you start with like, this sounds silly and it's not VR related at all, but you start with the unboxing and like Apple's boxes are so good. Like they're just so much better than any other boxes. So I'm opening this up and you have like the whole Apple experience or whatever. And then I put it on and it's like pretty comfortable right away. Like I'm like, oh, this is like kind of is easy to put on. Like I don't have to like adjust a bunch of straps or whatever. Like it's just kind of fits. I like turn the knob a little bit, but like in general, it just like comes and it fits and it's pretty comfortable and it looks nice and everything like that. All so far, like Apple experience. And then the very first thing I believe, at least it's the first thing now when I put it on, I think this was when I first tried it on as well, is you have the headset on and it's all black. And then there's like some sort of light coming in or whatever. Like you can see a little light. And then you see the Apple logo in like an all black background. And it's like super clear. And that's all you see. And then there's like some sound. And the really nice sound, like that's like very pleasant to hear, comes on as the reality takes over like your screen, like the pass through basically. And so it like just sort of like flips on the pass through as the Apple logo disappears. And I'm like, okay, like this is pretty cool. And that's like before you do absolutely anything. That's just like putting it on for the first time. And obviously, you know, subsequently also, that's every time you put it on, you get that same, like the turning on of the device is probably the most pleasant turning on of a device that I've ever experienced of anything. So that's pretty cool. And then I thought this was maybe what you were referring to with the demo, but it's definitely something a little bit different. But when you go through, there is like sort of a walkthrough of, you know, how to work the device. And like to your point, there wasn't, when I first put on the Quest or whatever and I played like a game or whatever, you know, that jaw dropping moment, you don't really have that again. Like you kind of can only have that once, I think. But the equivalent here, or like the closest thing to it, was in the instructions of how to use the device. It like sort of tells you, you know, where you look with your eyes and like what you were describing. You look with your eyes and then you like pinch your fingers and that's how you basically click. That's like the VR version of like using your mouse or something. Mm-hmm. And it has you, like it trains you on how to do that or whatever, but it has like, you know, a circle of like, I don't know, 6 or 8 dots or something like that. And it says like, look at the dot and then, you know, click it as like a testing how to, you know, teaching you how to use the mouse or whatever. And so I'm doing that and I like look at the dot and it makes a sound when I'm looking at it before I even click it. And then it makes another sound when I click it or whatever, when I pinch my fingers. And so I look at this dot and it makes a sound and I look at the next dot and it makes like a different sound. And I'm like, hold on, I can like play music with my eyes by like looking at these dots. And so I'm like looking at one dot and then another dot and then another dot and back and forth with like a little bit of a rhythm. And suddenly in this like how-to that Apple designed, I'm literally playing music with my eyes in like, by the way, with like my room, you know, in reality in front of me and just these dots sort of floating in space. So I'm like, okay, here I am like a minute into using this thing, playing music with my eyes. And this is not what this was intended for. So that was like sort of my original, you know, that might've been the biggest wow moment. And I couldn't help but feel like you might have a better sense of this. Like I didn't experience, or at least I don't really remember when like, you know, the mouse came out, like these fundamental innovations in computing. And like just sort of how to operate, you know, these different operating systems. But to me, to your point, like the difference between using these, you know, controllers in my hands with the Oculus 2 and looking with my eyes at like very specific small things in the reality in front of me and being able to pinch my fingers and select it, was like, okay, this is how you use one of these things. And maybe it's not the final version, but at least it's a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, the moment for me was when I was in that headset, and once you break out of all of this, once I got the headset home, right? They had a pretty controlled demo for me in the Apple store, but I got home and I just started moving windows around with my, I was able to quickly grab it and just it like move my hand, and whatever algorithm they're using to do that is just spot on. It feels so good. Like it just feels like when I flick my finger, I can put that window anywhere and I can do it. I can get it to like within a centimeter or less of exactly where I want it in my virtual space. And then the window, if you have the pass through on, casts a little shadow on, on your physical space, which I think like, you know, that's like, to me, like little things like that are so important for making you feel like you're in control of the operating system. And that this is not something that's trying, this is not, it's not virtual reality. It is trying to be this augmented reality, extended reality experience. And, you know, I want to talk for a second about that method of input and where we started, right? Because I mean, back when I was young, I want to say it was like 87 or 88, 1987, 1988, when our family got our first computer. I want to say it came installed with DOS 4.0, which at that time was a pure command line interface, right? And I talked about it on Twitter. I was like, that's basically like a one-dimensional interface in a lot of ways. It's basically like you just have a line of text, you're typing stuff in, and the computer does something. And back then, I remember being young, and my dad was, I think it came with like a 40 megabyte hard drive and 640 kilobytes of RAM, which if you think about in modern terms, you can now, most computers come with like a terabyte of storage at least, which is many, many times. I don't even, what is that? That's like a million. No, that's like a billion megabytes. I think that's what it is, right?
A lot.
It's a lot. I could be off on that. No, I think a gigabyte's 1,000. So it's a lot, whatever it is. I think it's a million megabytes at least. So in any event, terabyte is a lot of storage. And so, but I had this 40 megabyte hard drive, and my dad was like, hey, this is getting filled up from having installed a couple of apps on there. And he's like, can you figure out how to like get this stuff off of here so we can install more stuff? And I was sitting there like as a, you know, to 8-year-old or whatever. And I'm just like, dude, am I supposed to figure this out? He's like, here's the instruction manual. I was like, okay. And that was like my first experience really diving into, okay, how do I make this kind of machine work? And this is an experience that's totally foreign, by the way, to anyone growing up today, because they've got a phone that just works all the time. It's always up. It's easy to delete stuff. But even back then, figuring out how to delete something was super intimidating. But I eventually figured it out through using the command line. I got lucky and didn't delete any important like operating system folders. And that was my first experience with computing. A few years later, Microsoft released DOS 5.0. I think it was DOS 6.0 that had the DOS shell in it. Okay, and we did have a mouse that was usable in other apps at that point, but it wasn't part of the operating system. But the DOS shell, if I recall correctly, that was the first like operating system app that I used, which had like, you can use this mouse to control things and you can move a cursor around between various windows. And then all of a sudden that was like the first taste that I had of like, oh, there's another way of like doing computing. I'm not just using this weird mouse thing to play my flight simulator game or whatever, you know, or to use it in Paint Shop Pro or whatever apps, or Print Shop Pro or those kinds of things. These are like all old apps that don't exist anymore for the most part. And so I started using that. And then my first exposure to Windows was Windows 3.1 in 1992. And that was where I really saw, oh, wow, there's a whole nother way of doing computing. And of course, I mean, Windows wasn't the one to pioneer that, but Apple had done it. And then even like Xerox PARC had like initiated that whole visual graphical user interface. But once I started using that, I was like, wow, this is so much easier than using the command line. I was like, man, this is like, I felt like I was like, could do anything with this computer now, all of a sudden, having grown up with this. And it was now usable to a point where people who didn't have that level of technical understanding to be able to read a manual to do something could use these tools to do all kinds of magical things. And I felt that way again when I put on this headset and was doing this, what Apple calls spatial computing. And even though it's just as simple as like being able to move windows to exactly where I want in a 3-dimensional space, that was so like interesting to me. And the idea, and this is just the start of it, obviously, but you can imagine AR overlays on things that you're doing all over that are persistent, that stay there when you turn off the headset and turn it back on. So I think like this is our future, is having computers kind of wherever we want them. Instead of being buried in our device, we can bring the computer everywhere and do what we need to and just interact with it like it's just like a tool, like it's almost a part of our environment. So the focus becomes less on, hey, here's this device that I've got to look into. And I actually feel really disconnected when I'm looking at my phone and someone's in front of me. But if I know, like, hey, if I get an important notification, it's just going to pop up next to your head, then I don't feel like I have to do that, you know? I mean, like, and even I have an Apple Watch, which does something similar, but I feel like once you layer in that visual element, I don't know, a lot of people think this technology will be isolating, and it probably will be in a lot of cases, but I also think it'll be liberating in a lot of cases.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned the watch in that, because I thought of that with the watch as well. People are like, oh, more technology, like, you know, I have enough technology. And I actually viewed the watch, I got like the first version of the watch, you know, pre-order or whatever. And my whole thing, I don't even think I must not have researched it too well or something. I don't think it had the capability at that point to actually have cellular on its own. Like it actually had to be in the same room, or at least like the same building as your phone, I think, or at the very least, I didn't get the version that had those capabilities. And I got it without knowing that it didn't have that, for the purpose of basically having this, you know, watch that I could go out, you know, I was in college at the time. So I was like, if I could go out without my phone, like that'd be awesome. I could like call an Uber, I could call a friend, I could text a friend, I could coordinate. But in general, I won't be standing at the bar looking at my phone, because I won't have my phone. And I was like, so this is like a very cool way to actually leave my phone behind and not have it in my pocket all the time, and have this thing that is sort of intentionally constrained, so that I don't do, you know, too much of like just scrolling around on my phone. And similarly, I think that's like kind of similar to what you're saying. I haven't thought about it in too much detail, but almost, you know, you can imagine if this sort of develops into a form factor that's a lot easier to wear for, you know, many hours of the day, like a pair of glasses or something like that.
Yeah.
You wear them all the time. You have what you need all the time, and therefore you don't need anything all the time. Like, therefore you don't need your phone ever. You don't really need your computer ever. You have whatever you need whenever you need it, but it doesn't need to be sort of in your face all the time. And some of the like sort of negative repercussions from having this, you know, your phone in your pocket or whatever it might be sort of relieved by having everything available, but not in your face to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's spot on. And especially like for the watch, for example, like even if you didn't have the cellular model, which I didn't have the cellular model when I got my first watch, which I think I got in at like Gen 2 or something like that. But it was still useful because I could keep my phone in my pocket. Okay. Yeah. And so if I'm sitting there with someone and if I'm waiting for a text or something, I don't need to have the phone in front of me. I don't need to be like, oh, did I miss it? Buzz. I don't need to have it, you know, in my hand. I don't need to keep, hold on, let me just check to see if this person texted, because I know I'll get the notification on my wrist when it comes through. So that's like, I mean, to me, that is a positive model for tech. And I think the experience of most people who have the watches, it's allowed them to be a little bit more removed from having to use, to actually like stop their attention and focus on this device as much, this thing, right? I think this is actually, people, it's funny because I think it was like Mike Three Enjoyer, who's a guy on Twitter who I've interacted with for a while. He was saying, like, all these people are saying the headset is like Black Mirror-ish, and, you know, because it's like, it's dystopic because everyone's going to be walking around wearing these. And by the way, yeah, you do see people doing that right now as like publicity stunts. But if you've ever, if for people who own the headset, the last thing you really want to do is walk around in public with this thing on. I mean, I could see myself wearing it on a plane maybe, but it's not something that's comfortable enough to walk around with. Right. Right now it kind of bobs up and down. It's not a light headset. It's, I wouldn't say it's more uncomfortable than any headset that I own, but that said, it's not more comfortable than any headset I've really owned. So I think that's not there yet. But going back to that Black Mirror thing, this is the real Black Mirror right here. You know, this is literally like we're all transfixed on this. Instead of being present in the moment, we're all just looking at our phones. So I feel like, you know, fast forward, I don't know how many years it'll be, but let's just say 10, because I do think within 10 years, we would have a much better form factor device, probably that's mobile, probably within 5 to 10 years. And I don't know that everyone's just going to be buried in like random content all the time. I think they're going to feel liberated that they can access things anywhere. So if you're walking somewhere and if you need directions or if you're driving, here's a heads up display. It doesn't require you to take your eye off of the road or where you're walking. You're not going to get hit by oncoming traffic as easily. I mean, I see a lot of like, I see these things, these technologies potentially allowing us to engage more in the world around us. Now, some people will still use them for escape, right? I mean, that will still happen. And it could be the same people using them for both purposes, but in different environments, right? And that's another thing that also, I think, doesn't get talked about enough. For people who maybe don't know a lot of people in the real world, you can now talk with people online in a more engaging and direct way. And I'm sure you've played around with the persona thing a little bit. I have, and I've done whole meetings with it on, and people are like, and these are with people who know what I look like and know me. And they're like, you know, this isn't really that weird. They're like, it was weird for like 5 minutes, but then they're like, yeah, it's kind of capturing your mannerisms. It's capturing your eye movement, your smile and so on. And I don't know. So I see a lot of potential for these devices to connect us and reintegrate us with our environments, maybe even more so than some of the downsides that people seem fixated on.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And I think I want to like sort of open up a slightly different track, like going off of what you were saying earlier about the pass through, where it's you made an interesting point. If I understood correctly, I think that like it's almost like posing as AR, but really it's like VR. Like everything is manufactured in terms of what you're seeing, but it just happens to be sort of manufacturing what's in front of you. And so it like appears to be AR. And I thought that was a very interesting point because it's not, you put on the goggles and if you have nothing up, no monitors or screens or whatever you want to call them, it's not as good as just like, you know, not having a headset on. It's great. It's much better than what I, you know, previously on the Oculus Quest 2, it was black and white. And it was like super grainy. It was like not even close. I understand the Quest 3 is better. And I feel actually that I'm almost doing myself a disservice to have not tried that in comparison to the Apple. It's hard to compare to a generation previous. I understand it's got a lot better, or at least incrementally better. But anyway, moral of the story being like, it's not as good as reality. And obviously, and maybe not obviously, maybe eventually it can sort of get there. But what's kind of interesting to think about is like, that is something that they do have to catch up on over time. Like the form factor is something that, you know, needs to get better over time in terms of like the physical device, but also the sort of resolution of reality. I do think it kind of needs to improve further, perhaps significantly further, to sort of get on par with actual reality. And actually, I think that the limit of how good it can get is not even just parity with reality. It could go further to where it's actually better than reality, whether it's, you know, I had a coworker who sort of originally put me onto this idea a little bit, where he was like, when the Apple headset was being, you know, rumored, he kind of thought it was going to be like, just kind of like a headset that made the world look like Instagram almost, where like everything is just kind of like enhanced. And that would be like, even just that alone, like no other features, like kind of interesting. And so that is, you know, the upside is actually not just parity with reality, but maybe even enhanced reality in various ways. And then that's just talking about like base level reality, let alone sort of, you know, enhancement in terms of, you see someone in the street and it brings their profile up above you and up above them and reminds you of their name and, you know, things like that, or whatever other helpful, you know, you look at a tree and it can tell you all the information about the tree. And you just can actually like learn a lot better about the world around you, which I think a lot of people have kind of lost touch with. Like, you know, you can look at a building and like learn about architecture or something like this, and that's not something that really is easy to do. A lot of our learning like kind of happens in like a digital silo, and if you want to find something out about the physical world, you have to look into the digital world to figure it out, but they're not, you know, intermeshed at all. So anyway, I wonder kind of if you've thought about that track of, you know, we talked about like sort of the form factor. Have you thought about this parity with reality track as well?
For sure. And I think with the current headset, so first of all, I'll say, regardless of how Apple marketed it and how some of the earlier kind of tech influencers presented the pass-through, it's not, and like, I don't know if you saw the video, the review by Marques Brownlee, where he's like playing ping pong in this, just demonstrating how low the latency is. I think you could actually do something similar with the Quest 3. I think the latency in the Quest 3 feels pretty low to me. It just feels more warpy than the Apple. The Apple does a better job of getting the depth of things right. And when it reprojects it for you within the headset, it's definitely, it's limited by the physics of cameras. And so, you know, there is some dithering, especially in lower light conditions, you'll notice that. But I think what it's actually good at, so despite Apple showing people using this headset on the move, I think this headset is actually best used when seated, to be perfectly honest. And I've played around with all kinds of different environments, and now I'm primarily using it when I'm sitting like in my easy chair or on my couch. I leave it plugged in for the most part, and I can have like a full computing experience at my fingertips in my living room, ergonomic and comfortable, where I can position windows that are like 5 feet away from me. I said this on Twitter the other day, where, you know, when you get a little bit older, even to my age, where I don't feel like I'm that old, but like when I'm looking at text, like on a phone that's this close to my face, it's straining at this point for me sometimes. And I've got to really focus and refocus. So being able to just ergonomically project that text wherever I want, get it the exact size I want, I think that's so powerful. And I use the headset mostly in pass-through mode, okay? Because I, despite the limitations of that pass-through mode, when I'm in the headset, I'm usually focused on a piece of content within that headset, right? And so I'm not really, the environment is just in my peripheral vision. And so it's there, and it's sharp enough that I feel like I haven't left my surroundings, mm-hmm. which I think is crucially important. And if my wife is there on the couch, I can look over at her. We can have a quick chat. I'm not going to have like a long conversation with her while wearing the headset, but we can have a chat about whatever. And it's not that, at least it hasn't been that weird for us. Now your mileage may vary with your own family, but for us, that's been how I've been using it. And so I think that for that kind of use, the pass-through is actually more than sufficient at this point, if you're just using it to maintain awareness. So when I take off the headset, I don't feel like I've like went to a different world, unless I turn on the immersive mode, right? Then it really does feel like you're in a different world. I feel like I've just been working on my computer. I take the headset off and I'm back to reality. It's like I didn't leave.
Yeah, it's interesting. In talking about it, you're like, I mostly use it in pass-through mode. It actually hadn't even like occurred to me that one would use it not mostly in pass-through mode, because I've tried, you know, these environments that they have, which is like sort of a fundamental tab when you kind of open it up, that you've got like your apps and then you've got these like environments, and you can select an environment that's, you know, fully immersive, and you can kind of turn the knob to, you know, immerse yourself more in it, or just have it kind of be a little bit or whatever, but it can be totally immersive. And actually, relative to everything else, I was kind of underwhelmed with these things. Maybe it's because I had experienced the fully immersive thing with the Oculus, and because those immersive environments were intentionally sort of like animated and like, you know, not real, whereas the Apple ones are trying to be like, it's like you're on a lake or you're in a mountains or something like that. And it's, again, like just not quite as good as reality. It's good. Like it's, you know, arguably great, but it's just not, you know, you're not actually at the mountains, but it's pretty good. And actually where it gets to be really impressive to me, which is like, there's so, I didn't realize how easy it would be to go into so many different directions with this conversation, but it's, there's a lot there to sort of like go through. And one thing is with experiences, whether it's photos or videos from your own history, and it doesn't have to be panorama or whatever, but basically anything, especially panoramas, but also just videos, you blow them up big enough or whatever it is, it's, you can experience this content that you've captured from your life. And like content's like an overused word or whatever, but everything you've captured, like you take photos and you take videos for a reason. You want to like sort of remember that thing or be able to go back and reference that thing. And at the time when you're taking them, you imagine like, oh, I can go back and look at this on my phone, or maybe I'll do it on my computer or whatever. You don't really think about it. It's just like, oh, I take this on my phone. One day I'll look at it on my phone. What you didn't imagine was that there would be this device that could come out in the future that could make that moment that you've captured, whether it was photo or video, like way more relivable than you possibly could have thought when you captured the moment. And so, you know, there's this, you know, you can immerse yourself in a lake that Apple produced as like an environment or something. And it's like I said, like a little underwhelming, but pretty cool. But if you go back through your own history and there's something that you actually remember, and you just need that spark of like, being in a kind of pretty good version of it to make you feel like you're actually back there. For that use case, it's actually like extremely impressive. And I could sort of put myself back at like, you know, the backyard of my childhood home and have like nostalgia. And I can imagine the same is true for like videos of your kids or whatever it might be. Have you, you know, what is your experience been with like the photos and videos and everything like that?
The photos are definitely incredible. And I think that if you're really into like your photos, it's almost worth it to buy one of these headsets. Like if you're a photographer, you just love revisiting your photos, you find yourself on your photos app, because it's compelling. You know, when you're looking at photos on a screen this size, I'm holding up my phone, this is not that compelling. Okay. It's like, you got to zoom in. You can barely see what you're looking at. If it's of a person, that's like 1/100th the actual size. You're trying to make that out. It is better on a monitor. Right, a 27 to 35 inch monitor, it's better. It's maybe even better to have them on a TV where you've got it, you know, 65 inches or whatever. But to see photos in front of you of people that you know and blowing it up to life size or even bigger than life size, that is almost like an awesome experience in like the true like definition of that term. It is awesome, like your jaw drops. Right. And the first time I did that with some photos of a wedding that I went to, I was like, wow, it does feel like you're back there. And if you take any of the panoramic shots, they do this interesting like parallax effect where when you see your panorama, which is completely around you, it's blown up to basically be like the height of your ceiling or bigger, and you can almost look into the photograph because of some of the processing that it does. And then they also have introduced this concept of like spatial video, which I think is going to be really compelling. Right now, I think it does feel like a little bit of a novelty. A lot of people are commenting that they like it. I want to take more spatial videos. I wish they did supported spatial photos, because I don't always want to like take a video or something, right. Which hopefully they'll add support for stuff like that soon. But I think it's just a way to get immersed in your content. I think that's really compelling. I do want to pull the thread on your previous, on what we were talking about a second ago, on like this AR versus VR dilemma that I think we're dealing with in the space. And tie it back into this, because I think on the one hand, I think you're going to see the space diverge into like two sets of products. And we've already seen this to some extent, but one is going to be these VR headsets, which will all have AR pass-through capabilities going forward. And I think that's going to become an important part of the value proposition of these products, being able to use them in pass-through mode. So expect that to get better. I think simultaneously, you will also see some more limited products emerge on the lower end. And if you're familiar with like the Meta Ray-Ban glasses, I think that's a great example of that, where they don't even have a display on them, which I think like makes them like pretty limiting for me and not that interesting. They do have like supposedly great sound that comes out of the arms of the glasses. And they've got their built-in AI assistant. It's got two cameras on the front. It can't take stereoscopic spatial photos yet, but hopefully they could either add that in or do a future iteration. I hope Apple also releases some products on that end. And then eventually, once the technology gets good enough and cheap enough, you can imagine them putting like a transparent display or a projected display into a product like that. So now you're getting what you might consider to be more like augmented reality. Simultaneously, the headset side of things, which is the more VR oriented, will just get better and lighter and cheaper. And this will get more and more capable, the Meta glasses or whatever Apple produces. And eventually maybe they meet in the middle and there's just one product. But until then, I think that the pass-through stuff can get a lot better. I think that with like post-processing of the images and so on, which will get easier to do and maybe better, you might be able to see some of these camera limitations be offset by that. So I'm just excited. This is like the most innovative. There's going to be a ton of innovation over the next 10 years in this. And we're going to see, I think it's going to progress like mobile phones did. And it's just going to take off.
Yeah, to your point on meeting in the middle, I do think for that reason specifically, like Meta's approach is really interesting, where they seem pretty, I don't know if he's said it like in as direct terms, but it seems to be, you know, very obvious that they're taking, like, if you think about, you're trying to like sort of build a financial model or something like that, you go from like the top down approach, and then you have like the bottoms up, and they each kind of result in their different, you know, outputs and you can kind of like use them both appropriately. In this case, it's almost like rather than like top down and bottoms up, it's like glasses, like, you know, basically the Ray-Ban use case that you just described, and then like the goggles. And you're kind like, I feel like Meta's being kind of upfront about like, we don't exactly know what this is going to look like long term, and like, we don't know what like the ideal technology is going to be here. And like, of course, you can't really know. But we're going to start at both ends and develop from both ends. And like, yeah, you know, maybe that costs resources that if you put them all together, you know, maybe they would be able to move faster or something like that. But I'm pretty skeptical of that. I think it's probably, you know, you're not really sacrificing by having two separate teams working in two separate, complete different like sort of paths and borrowing from each other potentially, which actually could be, even that borrowing, which seems helpful, could actually be kind of adverse if one team relies on the other for something that maybe actually isn't the best thing to apply. Like if the Ray-Bans team relies on something from like the Oculus Quest and they're like, oh, that's an easy way for us to do this, but it's like actually coming from your end of things, maybe there was like a better first principles approach or something like that. So anyway, I just think coming at it from both ends is super interesting. Whereas Apple, obviously, if they are coming at it from multiple angles, it's not obvious. I guess they could be with like, I'm just kind of going out on a limb, but maybe like the combination of like watch and AirPods or something, like they just don't even have a form factor. And there's like the computing is their version of the Ray-Ban that is like not heavyweight headset is something that maybe doesn't involve anything on your eyes at all or something like that. I'm not really sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that for like Meta, you know, they're targeting the Instagram influencer crew with their glasses mostly, right? Because I mean, like you said, it's basically AirPods and then they've got like a camera on them.
Right.
And so I think your Apple, average Apple user actually doesn't care that much about having cameras on the front of their face, unless it's doing something that's like useful to them. They're not going to wear cameras just so they can take pictures while they're on the move. As a general rule, I think that's true. And they already have the AirPods, which are like the most popular wearable tech probably in the world. So I feel like for them, they've probably looked at this and said, you know what, we're not at a point where we can do like a compelling display in glasses like this. And so they're just like, we're going to go in the other direction. I think like actually Beeple had a good critique of the headset, which I encourage people to read. He posts on his Twitter. And he said something like, I wanted an Apple Watch on my face and they gave me a MacBook Pro or something on my face, which is pretty funny and it sounds dramatic. But he has a point, right? I mean, like, and is there demand for like a more of a watch style interface on glass? I don't know. I think that they'll probably try to develop something like, I'm sure they're already trying to develop stuff like that, but I don't think that I would be that interested in like the Meta glasses, but an Apple version. Like, and I don't think like a lot of Apple customers necessarily would be. I don't fault Meta for trying something new. I actually applaud them for putting this stuff out there and making these products relatively accessible with lower price points. I think that's cool. I don't agree with a lot of their decisions as a company and their modus operandi. Putting that aside though, they've been one of the biggest forces for VR, and we wouldn't be where we are if Meta wasn't investing billions and billions of dollars into these technologies. It's possible VR would be like 5 years behind where it is today if they hadn't bought Oculus and just pumped tons of money into it. But I think like, I will say conversely, I'm really glad that Apple took kind of a different approach. And it's like, you know what, we're going to go for like a real computing platform. And though it's limited, it feels more like an iPad than it does like a MacBook in terms of like what you can do within it. It's still super powerful. You know, like it is an iPad, but it's like actually more like 10 or 20 iPads or however many you want. And you can do all kinds of things productively in the headset. I think that's what makes this headset like different for me from the other ones. Like I never really felt like I wanted to wear any of my Quest headsets for more than the duration of the game that I was playing. And after a while, I just got tired of going in and leaving my reality to go do something because you feel cut off from everything when you're in there. And I get that that's a pro for some people, but for me, it felt like a con. It felt like I had to travel somewhere to go and use the headset. And I've been using the Vision Pro for 2 weeks now, and I've used it more than probably all of my Quest headsets combined, which I'm not like proud to say that I bought those Quests and I didn't use them a ton. I mean, maybe Quest 1 and 2 I use more. I'll tell you, Quest 3, I probably put like 10 or 15 hours into it. And I just, it didn't grab me necessarily. Whereas I can do like my computing tasks in the Vision Pro. You hook up a keyboard and you can go, man. You can do a lot of light productivity tasks in that headset, and now that I've gotten used to it, I can wear it for like a couple hours at a time, and it's not really that uncomfortable.
Do you find that there are questions that you can ask yourself, or like things that you can think about now when deciding, are you going to use the headset or are you going to just like sort of use your monitor or your phone? Like, I think already people aren't, even, you know, before this, just with phone and computer, my thought is that people are, you know, I've kind of thought that basically people aren't intentional enough about what is the right tool for the thing that I'm about to do. And in this case, now you have another tool and it's like very different. Have you thought about what questions you can sort of ask or specific tasks that you feel are sort of best suited for the headset, other than what you mentioned earlier, which is, you know, the question of where do I want to work? If I don't want to work at my desk, if I want to work on the couch, then this lets me do that. Are there other questions that you can sort of ask yourself?
Yeah. And the location one, you could almost make a decision tree for this, to be honest. It might be something interesting to do, but the location aspect, I think it is a really important one. It might even be primary for me. Mm-hmm. Cause I've got my office, it's like upstairs in my house, and I don't always like to be up in my office as someone who works from home. I like to be in the living room or in different spaces. And so if we take that off the table, though, I think the first question is what you're doing does it require like really precise input? Does it require you to be pixel perfect? Like whether that's drawing something, or if you're like creating like complex slides where you need to position everything in just the right place, the Vision Pro is not good for that right now. It can be if you have the keyboard and the trackpad with it, in which case you could probably make it work. And by the way, one of the cool things in the headset is if you have a MacBook, you can just open it up, connect the headset to it, mirror your Mac's display. But not only that, you can use the keyboard and trackpad in any app on the headset. Yeah. And so that, I think, is like actually that opens up a universe of things that you can do in the headset that you might not do otherwise. But in general, I think if you need to do really color accurate work, if you need to do that pixel perfect stuff, I don't think the headset is really there yet. So that's the first thing. Second is if you need to use some kind of really specific application, it's probably not on the Vision Pro yet. And if it is there, you're getting like the iPad version, which is usually compromised. It might not work great with the TouchOS input right now. And I think like in general, my feeling with the headset is a lot of it is taking like these 2D experiences from like our iPads and so on and projecting them in 3D. I don't think we've like cracked 3D user interfaces yet. I think that Apple did a tremendous job in getting like the base operating system stuff down in that 3D, like being able to move the windows around feels basically flawless. The eye and hand tracking works really well, although not perfect. And I'd like to see it improved. I think it's going to take time, but we will see app developers develop these compelling 3D experiences, which really allow us to interact in 3D. And I think like if you've played VR games, I've been playing them, as we said, like since 2016, 2017, the initial game started off with like really, it's basically like 2D windows in your space. And it's like jarring. It's almost immersion breaking. And then over time, people are like, oh, well, instead of reloading the gun by like pushing a button, how about you reach down, grab a clip and like reload it? And, you know, it almost took time for people to come up with these kinds of different 3D user interactions. So I think we're going to be skeuomorphic for a while until we have some of those breakthroughs. But I think that, just going back to your question, I think that's like, if you don't need that pixel perfection, then I think you can consider the Vision Pro. Like if it just requires like reading text, inputting text, if you have a keyboard, I prefer to do a lot of that now in the Vision Pro because of the things I mentioned earlier, because I can position it wherever I want. And I don't know if we mentioned this earlier, but text looks really good in this headset, like much better than any other headset that I've looked at. Like I can read, like, you know, if you can deal with wearing this thing on your face, you can read whole documents in there and it's more comfortable than looking at a 20-inch monitor or whatever.
Yeah, I mentioned, I think on Farcaster, like the other day, I just tried basically lying down flat on the floor. I have this like stretch that I try to do with like something under my neck and then like put my arms out. And so like I'm just lying down basically flat on the floor with the thing strapped to my head and looking like, you know, at the ceiling and reading, you know, a web, like a, an article on the ceiling and just flicking, you know, my pinching my fingers on the side and like sort of flicking it as I go. And like, that's just not something. It seems trivial, but you just can't do that in any other way. Like they could create a much simpler device that could allow for just that to be done, I'm sure. But you know, you probably have to like download a book from Kindle or whatever. Like this, you can do it with the whole internet. You could do it with your email. You could do it with whatever you want. And then the other thing I think that's kind of important to mention, to what, to your point on sort of like the keyboard really and the mouse making, or you know, the trackpad making like a lot of things easier that you wouldn't otherwise do with the headset, because the, you know, you don't want to use the virtual keyboard for much more than, you know, a few words here and there, but you can use the virtual keyboard to, you know, like prompt, like listening basically, where you speak the text that you want to use. And I found that to be super helpful as well. If I don't want to sort of get the keyboard involved, or if I just need to type, you know, something here and there, but it's not like a typing intensive activity. So it'll be interesting to see also, like, I'm generally very bullish on audio. I think audio is like tremendously underrated still. You know, AirPods like were a nice advance and they're very cool, but I think people haven't yet appreciated, like similar to what you said about 3D, actually like building apps that are intended for 3D rather than like skeuomorphic. I think audio has kind of just been like strapped on to the internet, but not people actually haven't made like audio native digital experiences in a sense. And so that as like sort of more of a background thing coming online at the same time as this VR AR, I think will be quite interesting. And one example of that is like, you can, to your point, like there's a bunch of apps that aren't, you know, like native for the headset, but they are downloadable as like sort of the iPad version. And one of those was like ChatGPT, which obviously you can use as you do like ChatGPT with the text, but you can also use the voice conversations sort of feature that they have and just have like that window, you know, in the corner of your living room while you're sitting doing your stuff. And if you just have anything you want to ask this expert in everything at any time, you like click the button and just say your question or whatever you want. And, you know, this very smart version of Siri will give you an answer like in audio form and, you know, record it in text if you need to reference it later. And like that alone is something that like I guess I could do that on my Mac, but I haven't even like thought to. I don't know like why, but there's like different things that you might be able to do with the headset that you either can't or just wouldn't have thought to do on like a single screen.
Yeah, and I think the audio input will become more full featured over time, and it can go even further. Like you can imagine an app's creating like a 3D avatar that's like sitting in the space with you, right? I mean, and that I think is where you start to get into some of the potential of what augmented reality can do. And when you say you're having a conversation with ChatGPT, and I've used the conversation feature a bunch on ChatGPT, and it feels pretty natural, especially if you give it some custom instructions to cut out some of the fluff, you can really have almost a dialogue. And it's a glimpse into that future, but layer that in with an avatar that's sitting in your 3D space and mixed reality pass through. And all of a sudden now you've got like another level of compelling experience. I do think you're always going to have a place for different input tools. So I think over time, actually, like, so I think the keyboard will remain a necessity for certain kinds of work, because keyboards represent kind of what they call like a level of superhuman input. Like you can type fast. Most people can type faster, or people who are good can type faster than they can speak and can do more with the keyboard. So I think that's one part of it. I do think Apple will also introduce at some point some kind of peripheral, and it probably won't look like a Quest controller is my guess. They're going to come up with something else, but like it's like the iPad was out for a few years before they introduced the Pencil, and that unlocked a new set of uses. So I hope Apple actually goes down a peripheral route sooner rather than later, because I think that just using your hand, they did a great job with the hand tracking, but just using your hands and being constricted to that is a bit limiting. And I don't think the trackpad is like the answer in 3D. I just don't think that's the ideal input.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about the keyboard. There's this sort of like special instructions or something. Like, I didn't make it. I like got it from someone. I forget what it was called, but basically it's a version of like ChatGPT that you can type like extremely sloppily and it will understand, you know, what you intended to type. Like, you can just like make maximum typos basically, and it somehow kind of figures it out. And I was thinking, like, if you take that and combine it with like, I think I don't use this, but I think it's a thing on the phone already, which is like you can kind of drag your finger around the keyboard instead of like pressing the buttons, and it'll kind of like connect.
The swipe,
But
yeah, you can do that with the default keyboard now. I think they built it in.
So I don't really use that, but I'm sure some people do and probably enjoy it, or, you know, they probably launched it for a reason because they foresee it as having like a lot of potential. And so you can imagine like something like that maybe as the space. Like, it definitely doesn't work, the virtual keyboard in with the headset, of like, you know, pressing the buttons. Like, it's fine. You can put in your passcode, you can type a word here and there, but it would never be something at this. It's hard to foresee that it could be something where you would want to use that instead of a keyboard. It's just like not even close. But if there's a version of it that's like sort of designed for the headset where you're maybe like swiping around, and similarly to how impressive it is that it captures like what you're looking at, maybe it uses a combination of like what you're looking at, or, you know, what you're dragging with your fingers, or what you're thinking, or like what, you know, it starts to become like almost like a Neuralink sort of thing, without necessarily having like, you know, an implant. But it's like it has enough of what you're trying to do. It has enough information that it can maybe be an even better version of that ChatGPT that's like piecing together what you mean, even with a ton of typos. And I could imagine something like that that would actually, you know, go beyond like the super, you know, capabilities of like a keyboard potentially.
Yeah, I think that non-implanted neural interfaces will develop a ton over the next 5 years. Even if it's just doing this clicking motion with your thoughts, which actually like probably isn't that hard with given current technology. I think also just the idea of a keyboard is skeuomorphic to like a 2D environment, right? We're used to using these keyboards, and keyboards are not intuitive. Like, take a keyboard to your grandparent or something like that who might not have experience using them, and they're just hunting and pecking. They're not like us who are like can type fast. It requires training. And so I think in the future, we will have a new form of input. I don't know what it looks like. I couldn't tell you, but I don't think it's like QWERTY keyboard 2D just in 3D. And we'll have a new way of entering text without our voices that we need. Maybe it's like flicking your fingers in certain ways. I'm just making stuff up now because I can't even conceive of what it is. Or maybe it is just jumping to predicting your thoughts and using that as a way for text input. I mean, the future just seems so insane right now that it's hard to even conceive what the world could look like in 10 years.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's I have a couple things, I guess, that I know we're up on time here, but I want to close on, and I don't want to sort of end before we get to, because I think they're really interesting. One is what was it? Oh, you mentioned earlier like ChatGPT actually being like a person in the room. And this was one thing that I was actually surprised. Maybe there's an app for it. If there is, I haven't found it, but there's really nothing that I can do in you know, the Apple Vision Pro today that like allows me to go in and be like in a room with another person, whether that person is real or like an animated, you know, character or whatever. And I was kind of surprised by that, because you can do that even in like the Quest. Like, you go on Horizon and there's like a bunch of people running around. And I remember that was another, like, you talk about these like sort of wow moments. That was something for me when I joined like a Horizon room. I remember I had this feeling of like when you walk into a room and you don't know anyone. And I was like, wow, like I'm here alone in my room, like with this thing strapped to my head. And I have that feeling that like I just walked into a place and I don't know anyone. And like, that's super cool. So I'm surprised that there's nothing really like that on the Apple Vision Pro yet. And like, I'm sure it's probably coming sooner than later, whether it's from Apple directly or like third party developers. But are you also kind of surprised by that, or is there something imminent that you would foresee? Like, the easiest thing to do from my perspective is just like you and I right now, you know, you're at your computer looking at my avatar on your screen, and I'm looking at you know, you through your camera on my screen. If I could just strap on the Vision Pro and it actually feels like we're in the room together, just sitting at a table across from each other, like that should be very straightforward. And they could use the persona, But they could also use an avatar, which to me is actually better and more sort of like digitally native, because why do you need to go and try to make like a reproduction of my actual face, which doesn't look as good as my actual face, when you can have like a perfectly clear looking digital avatar that looks great and is like is a pleasure to be in the room with and isn't like freaky at all. So that's something that like I don't think there's any, it doesn't seem like there's any technological barriers to doing that. And I'm kind of surprised that they haven't yet.
Well, I think the persona feature starts to get at that, but like you said, it's not fully there. But I think what they really wanted to do, I'm just projecting here, but I feel like what they wanted to do is differentiate from the Meta product a little bit. So personas actually look pretty realistic. I mean, they look, there's definitely an uncanny valley there. There's no question, but they look much more realistic. And I think they were trying to avoid like the Memoji or the cartoon avatar, because they just didn't want to lead with that direction. I agree that over time, they're going to allow you to use probably whatever you want to some extent, but they didn't want to lead with that. And they presented this persona feature as like beta within this product. So I think that there's a lot more to come there and there's a lot of opportunity, but they probably didn't want to put something out that they didn't feel like met kind of their standards for being immersive. I do think they did a good job with the personas, and like there's a lot of subtle nuances to those personas. Like if you're in a FaceTime and you're looking at someone, if you have two people in a FaceTime and you're looking at one of them, your eyes will be looking at them on their phone or in their headset, and the other person that's in the conversation will know that you're not looking at them. Like subtle things like that, I think are actually really technically impressive. I think too, just on the idea of these other entity, like these AI driven entities in your space, I think Apple, I don't want to get too deep into this, but most people are speculating that Apple is working on a fundamental re-architecture of Siri, and it's going to be revealed at WWDC this summer. And I think that that's going to be, Apple's been known to be buying up all these AI startups and has acquired a lot of AI talent as a result. This has been going on for years. So I think there's going to be a huge reveal around AI, and I think it's going to extend the capability of the headset tremendously, probably. This is just a gut feeling, so don't I don't have any insider information or anything like that, but that's what a lot of the speculation is in the space right now. And I think that's going to be super interesting to watch.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's surprising how bad Siri is still, and how, you know, stagnated basically it's been for so long. So it certainly wouldn't be surprising. And you could imagine that would just bring things forward a lot, not only, you know, with the headset, but, you know, the watch and AirPods and the whole ecosystem, basically. So last question, you know, we didn't talk about it much today, but most people who know you from Twitter or Farcast or whatever else it might be know, you know, you're all in on Ethereum and big into collecting digital art and NFTs and everything like this. You've spoken about how you think that virtual reality, augmented reality can really be a significant sort of milestone and step forward for digital art and digital assets more broadly. Can you sort of speak to that a little bit more now with the context of having the Apple Vision Pro? Is there anything you've been able to do in there so far, or things that you could sort of foresee doing now that you've got this, like, you know, latest gen sort of experience?
Absolutely. I think that, so for the first, I think like if we go back to the conversation we were having about photos a second ago, right? And we talked about the limitations of looking at photos on a 6-inch screen and then on a 13-inch laptop screen and even on a 35-inch monitor, it doesn't really feel like it's not an elevating experience. It feels limited. No matter how big you try to make it on one of those screens, you don't really feel like you can immerse yourself in the content. I think similarly for digital art, most people have consumed it on these small screens. They're used to that. That's what they think is like this, oh yeah, I'm looking at this piece of digital art and it's on my monitor and that's great. What AR will allow us to do is you can see you can then layer those art objects into your space. You can view them at, especially like in the case of generative art, which is my personal favorite kind of art form on the blockchain. Most of those pieces can be actually rendered at any resolution, which is part of the value proposition of generative art for me. So no matter how high resolution our screens get, you can blow up a piece of generative art to like infinite size practically. And I think that is just going to change how we think about digital art completely. And I mean, we talked about how people have already, in the time since I've grown up, lived more and more of their lives in a digital space, right? AR, I think, is going to allow us to do that even more and layer that digital space into our analog or, you know, real life spaces. And so I think there's just huge potential for NFTs to take off as a medium that people become a lot more interested in as we make that transition more fully. I think the other barrier to NFTs, kind of tangential to all this, is a lot of people don't understand the concept of non-fungible digital ownership. Just like me in 2013, maybe not fully understanding, or 2012, certainly not really understanding how Bitcoin could be digitally scarce, right? I just didn't get it. It takes some education. It takes a process. You've got to have an open mind. But I think more and more people are going to come around to this idea of, oh, you can have objects that are digitally scarce. And oh, I can interact with these digital objects in ways that I can't even interact with my physical objects. And I think that that unlocks a whole new universe of use, both for speculative purposes, for collecting purposes, for art purposes, and so on. So I'm excited. I think it's just, we're going to be living these digital lives. I'm hoping that it's not the dystopic vision, but it's more of a, we just integrate digital insight into everything that we do, which I think is the promise of augmented reality. And I think we're going to get there. You know, there are always going to be people who choose to use that technology to isolate. But I think for 90% of people or more than that, that's not how it's going to play out. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm optimistic and I'm excited both on, you know, the AR VR front, but also the crypto front, which we haven't talked about as much today, but definitely I think both of us probably spend a lot more time thinking about that. But this has been fun to take some time thinking about today and talking about today, and really appreciate you taking the time. It's been an awesome conversation, and it's going to be fun to see, you know, in a few years where all this stuff is, and you know, maybe between now and then or sometime around then we can get on and have a V2 of this and do the sequel, maybe in VR that time.
I would love to do that. And I'm hoping that the technology gets there for us. And thanks for having me on, Jake. I enjoy the conversation.
Awesome. Thanks, DC. Really appreciate it.